Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Own the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, November 19th. This is the 44th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guests are the co-producers of a new documentary on the incredible life of James Beard, and we also have a special guest in the studio, and I will introduce everyone shortly. First, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to be a pioneer. And how does one do that exactly? Well, it's not easy, but I think it's done by being real and being committed to what you believe in, no matter what others think. It takes a strong person to stand up for something, especially if it's not what's already popular and approved. But those who stick with their guns are often those who make a difference and impact on society. So be true to yourself, and you may become the next pioneer who influences the world, and that would be a very cool thing. So that's my tip today. Now, I have a special episode because I have two amazing people in the studio and one calling in. Here in-house, we have special guest Ronnie Rodriguez, the gregarious maitre d' of Chef's Dinner Series, and his lovely wife, Kathleen Squires, a serial traveler and award-winning journalist whose work has spanned book, blog, newspaper, and glossy. Kathleen is currently co-producing America's First Foodie, a documentary feature film on the incredible life of James Beard. And on the phone, we have her co-producer and director, Beth Federici, an award-winning documentary filmmaker and television producer based out of Portland, Oregon. So welcome, everyone.
Thanks. Hi, guys.
Thanks for having us, Shari. So excited to be here.
It's great to be here. And
me too. Even better so nice to be here.
Thanks for calling in. Welcome from the West Coast. So we have a lot to talk about. So I figured I want to get into the film, but I figured first, because Ronnie, you're here with us and you have this special dinner series you're doing. So why don't you tell us a bit about it and how did you get started doing this dinner series?
Well, my dinner series that we call Chef's Dinner Series is a series of dinner parties, essentially, that was inspired by a visit that Kathleen and I made to Argentina. In Buenos Aires, they have something called puerta cerrada, which essentially means closed door. And a puerta cerrada experience is essentially a private dinner party thrown by the chef. So instead of going to a restaurant to dine and taste the chef's food, what he'll do is that, or what she might do, is invite a group of guests to come to his or her personal residence and prepare a four-course wine-paired meal. It's very interesting in a number of ways because the chef can go in new directions, try out new stuff, and then you get to meet really interesting people who have come across the same experience and interchange ideas and get to know people that you have otherwise no other occasion to run into. And we have found that to be such a fun experience that we thought we'd transplant it to New York.
Yes, well, having gone to a couple, I definitely went to one. You started doing this now in your home, or your second edition of your home. So, and now you've moved, you're doing it in restaurants now. So how has it progressed? Because it's, having gone, it was a fabulous experience and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I'm glad you feel that way, Shari. It's, we've been getting great feedback, and I think the numbers speak to that, in that it started off as a hobby, really. I mean, who doesn't want to throw a dinner party and have friends over and a chef and have great food and great wine? I know that that's something that Kathleen and I live for, and I think you do as well. So it started off more or less as a hobby, and our first featured guest was Top Chef Masters Carmen Gonzalez, who happened to be in New York, and she guided me through the ins and outs of what is essentially a private restaurant. And we had our first dinner party in April of 2013, and since then we've had about 18 events featuring TV chefs, featuring Michelin-starred chefs, and even a few well-known personalities.
And now you're doing, there's a partnership, right?
Well, what's happening is that at one of the dinners, one executive of a media company came up to me and said, you know, this is fantastic. We love what you're doing here. Everyone walks away having had a great time. Maybe because they're a little tipsy, I don't know. But we create an atmosphere of fun and gregariousness, and it's really rare to have the opportunity to meet someone new and then have 2 or 3 hours of great conversation over great food and wine. And they thought that that is something that they wanted to include into their lineup. And so since then, I've been working with them and through them others to create this kind of experience for sponsors who wish to have their brand names exposed to this kind of situation, so that people come in, have a great time, and walk away very thankful to the brand and remembering the brand. And in fact, tonight I'm off to host the last one for 2014.
And who is the chef tonight?
The chef tonight is going to be one David Boulay, whom I'm sure you've heard of.
I have heard of him. Not too shabby.
He is. He's actually going to be hosting our group at his private test kitchen in downtown Manhattan. And this is an experience that will be categorized as a priceless experience under the MasterCard sponsorship.
Awesome. I'm sorry I'm not going to the one tonight, but I have been. I went to Barbara Sibley's. They're really special experiences because they're intimate, and you do get to try the food of a chef that, as you were saying at the beginning, they experiment a little bit and they give you dishes they may not have on the regular menu. So it's nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So now let's get into the documentary a bit. So now I've known both of you for a while, more from, I think it was the event circuit, probably going to the James Beard Awards. And so now, you, Kathleen and Beth, you've been working on this documentary. What inspired you to collaborate on this?
Well, Beth is an old friend of mine from college, and we reconnected when she was living in Hoboken near New York City, and Beth had moved back to Portland, Oregon. And one night while we were keeping in touch, we were Skyping, I had told her, I just came back from James Beard House, a dinner there. And Beth said, what? You had dinner at James Beard's house? What's up with that? And I started telling her about the foundation and how the foundation hosts dinners within James Beard's house. And I also realized, oh, hey, James Beard is actually from Portland, Oregon. Did you know that? And that's when I think Beth's head kind of exploded. Right, Beth?
Yes.
And when was that about?
Yeah,
how many years ago?
Oh, this was probably 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, almost 2 years. It was January of 2013 that we had that conversation. And we did a little research and realized that there had not been a feature-length documentary about James Beard. And as one of the interviewees in our film says, you know, everybody knows the name, but they may not know who he is, but everybody knows the name James Beard, we realized it was long overdue. And we probably started our first Portland shooting in March and then came to the James Beard Awards in May and continued to shoot and have been shooting ever since.
Yeah, so Beth, your background is in film, but you had never done anything in the food world before. So what's this process been like? How did you come up with the people that the luminaries or the people to talk to? I know I've seen a snippet at the last year's awards, which was really great. So what's the process been like?
Well, I have to say first that I could never have made this film if Kathy hadn't been so incredibly connected in the food world, because she was able to get through doors that I would not have ever been able to on my own. And that being said, she already knew a lot. And of course, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, I'm an avid researcher. I went out and got every book that existed, and I started reading them and doing online research, and certain names kept popping up. Obviously, Judith Jones, who was his editor, we knew we needed to get Judith, and the folks at the Four Seasons, because he had worked with Restaurant Associates, and Charlie and Hillary Baum, who are the children of Joe Baum, who opened the Four Seasons and Windows on the World. And then just through various people, they would say, oh, did you know this person? I can put you in touch with this person. I mean, that's literally still happening today. As a matter of fact, you know, we still have a little bit of shooting to do because wonderful, wonderful people, you know, just kind of keep coming onto our radar. As we like to say, the hand of James Beard has really been at work here as far as the serendipity and the generosity of everybody that's participated.
And Shari,
that's kind of how the process has been going.
Great.
One of our goals, too, Shari, was to interview people on different levels about James Beard, the people who knew him as a friend, the people who worked with him, the people who were mentored by him, and then people who are prominent food figures in the industry who may not have known him, but what either won James Beard Awards or were influenced by him in some way.
Right. Now, Kathleen, I've known you as a writer, and now, is this your first experience working on a film?
Yes.
Yes. And what's that been like? Because you're an amazing, I mean, with writing, it's knowing the subject and interviewing people, and I'm imagining you translated that into now working on a film.
Well, thanks to Beth's expertise and guidance, the process for me was just a wonderful learning process. I really did not know anything about filmmaking, and that's why Beth and I complement each other so well, is that, you know, I come from the food perspective and she comes from the documentary perspective. And what I was surprised to learn is that making a documentary is a lot like writing a story. You're doing the research, you're doing the interviews, you have all of these transcripts you have to go through from them, and you're fitting them together to tell a story. So I was surprised to see how similar the process was.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Okay, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back, talk more about the James Beard documentary. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Kathleen Squires and Beth Federici, the co-producers of America's First Foodie, and we were talking with Ronnie Rodriguez of the Chef's Dinner Series. Okay, so I want to get more into this James Beard documentary and find out what you guys find out talking to all these people.
What did we find out? You'll have to wait for the movie, Sherry.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. Well, I think that one of the things that I really, having been someone who really didn't know very much about him, but knowing that, you know, that the James Beard Foundation and the dinners at the awards, they're very prestigious and, you know, very kind of hot, if you will, but that he was really an incredibly down-to-earth person. He grew up on the West Coast in Portland, and I think he brought that West Coast kind of mentality to New York. Even though he lived in New York for 50 years, he always had a foot in Oregon, and I think that really informed his palate and it informed his cooking classes. And I think that that's probably maybe a little bit of a misconception people have. I think they assume that he was this very fancy chef, when in fact, if you ever called him a chef, he would say, "I am not a chef. Andre Sermain is a chef. You know, these wonderful people that he worked with were chefs." He would call himself a cook because that's really what he was. He learned to cook from his mother and from reading. He was a voracious reader. And so he really, I think, was a lot more small-town boy, even though he was lived in the big city for so long. Then I don't think people quite realize that. Kathy, anything else that you want to add?
I actually was surprised to find out that even though he had the first cooking show on television, that he actually was not quite telegenic. And that his show was canceled. I think this is a great little fact, too. He was sponsored by... was it Borden?
Borden.
Yeah, Borden. And the sponsor pulled their sponsorship because they didn't think TV was going to work out as a new technology. So that was surprising to find out.
It's all about radio.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And I also think that people, I think because the foundation has done such a great job of keeping his name alive, I don't think people realize that he was born in 1903 and that he saw every great technology you can imagine, starting with the radio and the first car. He went on a car ride with one of the first families in Portland that had a car, and he was first on television. So talking about pioneers, I mean, he was one himself, but he also was living in an age of pioneer and pioneerism. And so I think thinking about the way it was to be a food writer in 1935, and it was very different than the world today. And I think that the internet has made not only research so much easier, but FedEx. You know, I had Larry Forgione, who was a very famous chef in New York and had a restaurant called An American Place that actually James Beard helped name. Talks about that he had, you know, when he worked at the River Cafe first, they had a full-time staff person whose only job was to go to the airport multiple times a day to pick up ingredients. And then when FedEx came along and all of a sudden you had door-to-door delivery every day, that just changed the landscape of what, you know, restaurants could do. And so I think that that's also what we want to remind people, is that he was working at a time when it was a desert out there, and knowledge was hard to come by. You couldn't just get on the internet and look up a recipe. You know, that's why he answered his phone all the time. Can you imagine calling up Bobby Flay, like having his number listed in the phone book, and asking him, "Hey, I tried to make this recipe and it didn't work. What happened?" I mean, James Beard always answered his own phone. His door was open because people needed that you know, that resource. And I think we take it for granted today that all of this information is at our fingertips. And he had to actually really go out to those places and find those restaurants and discover them and discover the recipes and bring them back to the rest of us. And I think that the industry wouldn't be as successful as it is today if he hadn't been willing to do that.
James Beard definitely did not rely on Yelp.
No, and it's funny with the phone call because, I mean, I suggested or I told you about this Bob Marcelli who I had on the show who I randomly met, and he had told me on the show that he had randomly just, like, looked up James Beard's number in the phone book and called him, and he picked up the phone, and that's how he got connected to him. So it's true. I mean, that is how it worked.
Exactly.
Very different. No emailing.
Yeah, no emailing, no personal assistants, no, you know, entourage following you around. He just went out. Even though he was a huge celebrity, he always welcomed people, always, you know, gave autographs and took pictures with people. He was really very generous of spirit and of knowledge. And I think another thing that people don't realize is that he was incredibly knowledgeable on all of the arts. He started out as an opera singer and an actor. His mother loved the arts, took him to the theater, to museums, to the opera, which he maintained his whole life. And he could talk to you intelligently on a variety of topics. We interviewed Ariane Batterbury, who was one of the founders of Food & Wine magazine,
Yes. And
she was friends with him. And she said, actually, when we would be hanging out with him socially, we didn't talk about food. We talked about everything else. We talked about opera. We talked about the arts. We talked about politics. So he was really, really a well-rounded, you know, bon vivant in a way that we don't necessarily, I think, see anymore. People are very kind of specialized, and I think he really had a broad artistic knowledge, and that, I think, informed, you know, his attitudes towards food and dining and good living.
Did you get into the design of the Beard House at all? Because he lived there, right? With all the mirrors,
yeah.
And I mean, it's a very unique place.
It is. And, you know, his good friend Jerry Lamb, who we've interviewed, who lives here in Portland, who is an antiques dealer and interior designer, was one of the designers, I think probably maybe the last person to give a facelift to the house, you know, in the last probably 20 years of his life. So, yeah, Jerry was very involved in the mirrors and the outside shower and, you know. But if you've ever been in the Beard House and walked upstairs, it's almost impossible to imagine this man being able to fit up that staircase because he was, you know, 6'4", 6'5", and many pounds, and that staircase is windy and narrow. So, you know, as old brownstones were, I think he was just too big for the bathroom. So that's why he wanted the outside shower.
Okay.
I think he was an exhibitionist, too. A bit of
well, he certainly was not shy.
Well, I do like the bathroom with all the mirrors because you can see the back of your hair and you can get all angles.
Exactly.
So what now, you guys did a Kickstarter campaign, which was successful. And
correct.
So what was the purpose of doing that? And congratulations. I am one of the backers and proud to be.
Yay.
So,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. So what's happening now that it's come to the end and you've raised the money?
Well, that's a fraction of the money. I mean, I would say that probably one of the biggest difference between filmmaking and writing is that it's just so expensive. There's so many elements that, you know, we have to gather in addition to the words that cost money. Archival footage, archival photographs, of course, my editor, who is fantastic and doesn't come cheap. So the Kickstarter money is allowing us to now move forward and secure Greg Snyder, who's our editor, and the folks at Blue Chalk Media, who are helping us with post-production, to be able to actually secure them now for a nice chunk of time so that we can really get into the meat and potatoes of making this film. We've made the trailer. We've now made an extended trailer that we're going to be using to submit for a couple grants, but this is going to be an hour-long documentary. So There's a lot of work to be done. So the Kickstarter will let us get going, and then hopefully that will help us to continue to generate more money. We're in discussions right now with WNET and American Masters, and we really feel like James Beard certainly was an American Masters, and then that's a perfect fit. So I think that will be helpful in raising money as well. So it's just the beginning, but it is allowing us to now move forward, which is great.
Perfect. So when is the film? When are you hoping it's going to be out, or is it? Are you trying to get it done for the Beard Awards in May?
You bet.
Okay, that's what I figured.
That would be good timing.
So we're all going to Chicago.
Yes. At least for a sneak preview. I mean, as the person who has to actually finish this,
right?
You know, 2015, 100%, and hopefully, a sneak preview around the Beard Awards, and then you kind of go from there. Film festivals, food festivals, TV, everything kind of gets rolled out, after that. So, but certainly 2015, without a doubt. And the path we're on now, I think that's realistic.
Great. I think you'll make it. I
think so, too.
I believe. Okay, we're going to take another break here. We're going to come back and do my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is all in the industry on Heritage Radio Network. Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Kathleen Squires and Beth Federici, and Ronnie Rodriguez has left the building, so goodbye, Ronnie. He's off to his event.
Bye, Ronnie.
Bye.
Bye, Ronnie.
Okay, so we're going to do my speed round game now. So what this is I'm going to name two things, and you just pick your preference. So whoever wants to go first, or you can just chime in whenever.
You go first.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Can I say both?
You can say whatever you want. There's no right or wrong.
I love the restaurant scene, and I love keeping up with what's new. There's so many new things to discover. So I would say I love to eat out, and then, hey, once in a while, you got to cook. You got to stay in.
Got it.
Yeah. I would have to agree with Kathy. Although now the restaurant scene is not out my door like it is hers, so I probably do spend more time in, but I love them both.
Cool. Okay. How about wine, beer, or cocktail?
Wine.
Beer. Excuse me, beer.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
I go small, too, just because you get to try more.
I know, exactly.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Tipping, for sure. People, I think, if they go above and beyond, they should definitely get above and beyond.
Right. How about communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Yeah, chef's counter.
I like to watch the action.
Me, too. Directing, producing, or writing?
My answer is writing.
Yeah.
You're
producing.
Stuck.
It's tough, but I mean,
You said producing?
Producing and directing.
Okay. Got it. Okay, a couple more. Investors or crowdsourcing?
Ooh, investors are less stressful.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Cheese plate.
In unison on that.
Okay, yeah, last. I didn't even think about that.
I know. Last one, Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Portland?
I'm going to say Manhattan.
I've got to say Portland.
All right.
But it's so nice to have such to have my own room at 130 Barrow.
Yes. Beth's got a, like a little plaque on the door there. She'll be coming actually this Friday.
Lucky, yay! Lucky you.
Awesome. Go Pards.
Okay, so I waited to ask my question that I had from last week. I asked my guest, Scott Feldman, to ask you a question. Scott is from 212 Next. And I waited because he did a spin off my speed round game. So I figured I'd wait. First of all, he gives you a lot of credit for working on this ambitious project of the documentary. And he wants to know how you think James Beard would answer the following questions of my speed round. So here we go. Dine in or dine out?
Ooh, wow. It's funny. I was just reading something in one of the books today. I mean, I think that, like Kathy, I think he really enjoyed both.
Yep, I second
and
that.
Because he
sure.
had, you know, such amazing friends, dining in for him was often like dining out. So he got to have the best of both worlds.
But he also, he loved being treated like a king at the Four Seasons
yes,
and
absolutely.
Restaurants like that.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll give him a both. How about bar or dining room as his choice?
I would say dining room because he was so large. I can't see him just sitting comfortably on a bar stool. And
yeah.
he's the type of gentleman who loved to hold court. So I picture
exactly.
him holding court at a large dining table.
Yeah. And I also think at that time, you know, bar stools were really bar stools.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think he would have not thought it was up to his caliber.
Okay. How about savory or sweet?
I would say savory because of that
I
onion story.
Savory.
Yeah, you want to tell the onion story?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, when he was even just a toddler, he managed to crawl into his mother's kitchen and ate an entire onion with the skin and always laughed at, you know, that's why he had such a closeness to the onion. But also growing up out in Portland at the time that he grew up, while there were some sweets, there was a lot more fresh fruit. And I think that at the end of the day, he loved cheese and I think savory definitely.
Wow. Onion story. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one. Dump and stir or competition TV show?
But, I would say dump and stir.
Well, I would say that, too, because that was the format of his show, and he had friends like Julia Child and Jacques Pepin who followed that format. But Beth, couldn't you just see him as a former actor relishing the role of being a judge on an Iron
Absolutely.
Chef or something?
Absolutely. I think that he would not want to compete, but if he was asked to be a judge, he would be all over that.
Huh.
But I think if he was going to be actually cooking, I think his whole mission was that you know home cooks, because at the time he started, you know, you have to remember that we were really in the quick casserole days. He just felt like it doesn't have to be this, you know, diametrically opposed world of either the fancy restaurant or the Campbell's soup. That home cooks could cook really great stuff for not a lot of money, as long as they, you know, could get the proper ingredients. And he was all about seasonal. And so I feel like, you know, he would love to see that tradition kind of continue.
Well, I'm super glad that Scott asked that question. It was great because it brought out a lot more information. It was very interesting. So that was terrific. Thank you. Now, industry news. I want to talk about this in the New York Times. They had out Newark Airport lands big name chefs, and it was by Florence Fabricant. And I mean, the list of the amount of chefs that are now involved at Newark Airport, they did they're doing a $120 million upgrade. So just to name a few, because I couldn't believe how many, they have Alex Guarnaschelli, Jack Torres, Paul Liebrandt, Dan Kluger, Amanda Cohn, Jose Garces, Harold Moore. I mean, the list goes on and on. And I think I think a lot of people are excited to fly out of Newark all of a sudden.
Yeah. I know that it'll encourage me to fly out of Newark. I mean, luckily I only have to walk down the block to go to Harold Moore's Commerce, but I would eat his food anywhere, anytime. So I'll go to Newark for the likes of Harold Moore and that list.
And I have to say, Harold Moore is a chef who I ran into recently, and he told me he listens to my show and likes it, and it made my day.
Yay.
So thank you, Harold, if you're listening now.
Sherry, let me tell you one other thing, because all roads lead to James Beard. that this is a long tradition. Joe Bauman Restaurants Associates, the very first restaurant that James Beard ever worked on as a restaurant consultant, was the Newarker. And if you go online and look up the Newarker and see the groovy pictures of this restaurant in the 50s at Newark Airport when flying was still so glamorous, you can see it's just coming completely full circle. That
Absolutely.
It makes sense because I feel like, you know, flying has become like taking the bus in many ways. And it would be nice to have a little elegance come back to to the airport.
Yeah, no, I think this is really exciting they're doing. I mean, with JFK Terminal 2, that I don't know, a couple of years ago, that's in a sense started the newer trend of this. I just couldn't believe how many people were involved. It's could
insane.
Just spend like a month just eating at the airport if you get stuck.
And I will tell you, Portland has been rated like the number one airport in America for many years in a row, I think. And we have fantastic food and drink at the Portland Airport. So I never mind getting there early because, you know, I always know that I'm going to be able to have a great beer or a glass of wine and good food. So it's and, of course, I grew up in New Jersey, as did Kathleen, so I fly into Newark all the time. So it'll be nice for Newark to come back to its roots.
Yeah, I think it will be great. Some sad news I wanted to just bring up. It was in Gothamist how beloved village shop Bonnie Slockett's cookbooks, well, the cookbook shop, it was on West 10th Street, is being forced to close, and it's been there for 15 years. I'm thinking you're familiar with it because it's your neighborhood.
Bonnie's in our film.
Oh, she is?
Yeah, she has helped us tremendously. She has let us kind of go through her collection, her James Beard collection, and she is an authority on cookbooks, and she's in our film, and we are tremendously sad about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. I had no idea she was in your film, but it's heartbreaking when businesses that are so loved and I don't know, I just read that the landlord wasn't renewing her lease. So
yeah, I have talked to her though a little bit on email, and she is looking for a new space, so that's good.
Great.
And she might actually get to take a vacation that she hasn't been able to take. She will be in that spot through Christmas. So certainly people should go support her and buy, if you're buying Christmas cookbooks, you should go to Bonnie's. And then she'll get a little break, and then hopefully she'll relocate. But, yeah, it's sad, and I think it's been happening in New York for a long time, right? Great old businesses are getting pushed out, and people think they're going to make a lot of money, but you're going to lose the character. So hopefully she will literally pop up somewhere else.
Yeah, I hope so too. Okay, we're going to take one more break here, and we're going to come back and do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. On Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Now, this week I checked out Shuko. Here's the rundown. The location, East 12th Street between Broadway and University Place. The concept, Japanese sushi omakase-only restaurant. The chefs, Nick Kim and Jimmy Lau. Why did I go? Because this duo made their mark at Netta for their superb Japanese cuisine and sushi, and there was much anticipation for their brand new place. My experience. I made a reservation for one on Saturday night. Yes, I took myself out for omakase. I was seated at the sushi counter right in front of Chef Darren, who worked meticulously as he prepared the sushi for the six of us on his side of the counter. Service was genuine and on point. What did I get? Green tea and omakase, of course. No menu was presented. It turned out to be 27 small plates or bites. My take? It was terrific. Everything was super fresh. The composed dishes to start were original and beautifully presented, and the sushi from the hamachi to the giant scallop were delicious. Highlights for me were the first amuse pistachio bite, the caviar and toro, and the apple pie as a finale. The scene? It's a 20-seat sushi counter with comfortable stools, and there are 6 seats at tables on the side. Low lighting, modern yet comfortable design, and the playlist is hip-hop, R&B, and soul. It's perfect for dining solo or date night. Interesting tidbit, according to Chef Darren, the entire team of Netta is now at Shuko. Personal fun fact, I beat Josh Beckerman, a.k.a. the foodie magician, to this new spot, which is hard to believe as he's always at the new place's opening night, and he loves sushi. The cost, $175, pre-tax and tip. Would I go back? On a date on someone else's dime? For sure. Ask me out. Website, shukonyc.com. Okay, now, it's time for the final question. So, I'm away next week, but then my next guest is Steve Kuzo, the New York Post restaurant reviewer. So, Kathleen and Beth, I wanted to see if you could ask him a question.
Sure.
I'm going to leave this one to you.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, my question for Steve is, I actually went to a restaurant he wrote about and raved about that was quite under the radar, and that is Clement Restaurant at the Peninsula Hotel. I think that Chef Brandon Keita was a great discovery of Steve's. So, I want to know what other secrets Steve is keeping from us. What other under-the-radar chefs? What were some of his pleasant surprises of the year?
That's a great question.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I haven't been to that restaurant, and I think Steve, I bet, does have some secrets he might not share with all of us. So. Yeah,
he's going to now, because I asked. He has no choice. Live radio.
I can think of one question, because this is Kathy's world, not mine. But I guess one question would be, is there any restaurant that is not open anymore that he wishes that he could have dined at?
That's a good question.
Okay. Yeah. Two good questions.
The historian in me always goes back in time.
Not surprised you guys had two good questions. Well, this flew by, but thank you so much. This has been fun.
Sherry, it's been
great. Thank you so much, Sherry.
Well, you're welcome, and congratulations. I can't wait to see the documentary. I've been talking to Kathleen Squires and Beth Federici. They are the co-producers of America's First Foodie. Their website is americasfirstfoodie.com, and on Twitter, they are at firstfoodie, at ksquiresnyc, at Federici Films. My Twitter is at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry, and at Heritage_Radio. If you missed a live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org, and we are on Stitcher and iTunes. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, and thanks to Beth, Kathleen, and Ronnie. I will be away next week, but please have a wonderful Thanksgiving and come back Wednesday, December 3rd. I will have a live show then with Steve Kuzo. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network, and... That's it. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.